And we're back. Welcome back to Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast. Another week, another episode. My name is Nicholas, but I'm not here alone. Here with me is our resident elf prince, Kuhn. How you doing?
Wow. Well, with an introduction like that, I'm doing very good. I've had an exciting week with stuff to look forward to. And we have some great guests this episode, namely Niklas and Kuhn. Well, yes, sorry for that horrible joke. I sort of thought of it beforehand, but I was proud. I'm sorry. I'm doing fairly good. I was super nervous for a release of a song that we did with Seed, but I'm back on Earth now. I'm back on Earth. The super moon has waned. And how about you?
I'm great. Today was a sunny day and I felt good. But let's actually talk a bit more about that release you had. So I'm going to fill in for those who do not know yet. Kuhn plays an amazing Dutch pagan folk band. They're called Seed. And they released a music video for their new song. And I'm going to apologize in advance for the pronunciation of the Dutch words. It's Het Vergeten Volk.
Beautiful.
Yes. So they released a music video for that, and they premiered it yesterday, which was the 7th of May. So today we're recording on the 8th. And yeah, it's an amazing video, and you should definitely check it out. Kuhn, talk to me about how the whole thing came together.
Wow. Okay. So that takes us back a little bit. Our songs are sort of always written together, but there's always one like voorzetje from one of the band members, and in this case that was Sarah with the main melody and the beginning of the lyrics. I think we finished it together. It might have just all been her. That was quite a while ago, and we recorded it some months ago, so before the whole COVID thing, because we had to cancel all the other stuff. So we still had this in the fridge, and we had great ideas for a video with a storyboard and la-ti-da and great nature drone footage, and then stuff went down. So we had the song ready. Joe found an Irish mastering studio because we wanted to put in that Ireland in the credits as well. And so we're like, okay, what are the options? So there's this digital age, so we have cameras, so we can just record ourselves. So we handed that footage over to David. It was very basic footage, and he sort of knitted it together. And now we have this song about fairies being forgotten because their stories are not being told by everyone. And I think we're sort of preaching to the choir here, maybe, because maybe a lot of our listeners do read their fairy tales, do read their fantasy, do know about trolls, do know about elves and all the folklore. But I think it's a trend that it's sort of dying down and gets dumbed down a little. So this is like a cry from the perspective of the fairies. They're like, okay, guys, don't forget us, sing about us, look for us so we can stay alive. It's like Neil Gaiman's American Gods. If a god has no followers, it just ends up in a tiny apartment in New York. So we sort of want to keep the fairies out in nature and alive in the mind of the people, basically.
Yeah, and I think you really did a good job in doing that. I've definitely got that song stuck in my head for a couple of days now. I think you showed it to me in the last recording session, sort of a sneak peek of the unfinished version, and I really loved it. And I'm happy that it's out there now. And, well, again, you should definitely check it out because it's an awesome song. And I'm really excited about all the other music that you want to put on that new album of yours. I don't know. Makes me really excited about that.
I think we've always been trying to keep that growth in composure, compositions as well, and like maturing the music. So yeah, I think we have some really cool stuff lined up, but it still has to wait, sadly, until after this crisis. But well, thank you for your kind words, and I hope this music is going to reach some more people, because it's hard enough as a pagan folk band as it is to let your music reach people, especially when you don't have like a pirate or Viking niche going on, which definitely helps with sort of finding connections with bigger artists. And so yeah, let's hope we can make fairy folk hip again.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm gonna tell you right now, Waldkauz is probably not gonna join you in that, but...
Are you going to be a pirate band?
Yeah, no, pirate and Vikings.
Oh, wow, nice.
I mean, I guess Vikings were sort of like the original pirates to some degree. I don't know, that's wildly historically inaccurate, I apologize. But, you know, it's all in good fun. Yeah. Yes. Well, I was just thinking today, the day we're recording is actually kind of a holiday in Germany. Because yeah, we're celebrating the liberation of Germany from the Nazis today. I think. So and in a couple of places in Germany, that is like an official holiday where you don't have to work and stuff. So
it's,
yeah,
interesting because. It sort of makes sense that we celebrated that a couple of days earlier because the Allies arrived there a little bit earlier. So yeah. We had that on Tuesday, actually. Yeah. So we also have a national holiday.
Yeah. So let's all be thankful for that. And, you know, let's all remember that and don't vote for fascists.
Things got political fast.
I mean...
I think if
people don't agree with me or with us on that position, I don't really probably want those listeners, right?
Yeah. And otherwise we're open for a super healthy discussion if that is able to flow from that.
Yeah, but yeah. All right, yeah. Let's not, that's for a different episode. But,
yeah, let's all be happy that we can believe what we want, say what we want, look how we want, and make the music that we want.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and now let's sort of inch over to the topic of today's episode, which is the third installment of an ongoing series, maybe the finale, of Playing Live, or I don't know. I think on Spotify I called it Do It Live or something. Do It Live? Doing It Live? Well, something along the lines of that.
You're edgy.
Well, have you looked at me? I'm super edgy, Kuhn.
You're the edge master, yeah, that's true.
All right. We're going to talk about sort of the end of playing a concert, about, you know, the afterglow, the after show, the after blues.
Wow. Yeah.
That came to me so naturally. Amazing.
It flowed super well. Wow.
Yeah. So
people might think
this is
rehearsed, but it's not.
It's not.
I'm super impressed by you.
Thank you. That means a lot. Okay, so I don't know to which precise moment we talked about last time, but I guess we sort of ended like... You know what? I'm just going to start where I think we can start out, okay?
Yes.
So what I'd like to talk about first is the end of the concert, because there is one particular thing that I want to hear your thoughts on, which is the encore, you know? When at the end of the concert, you go, sort of come to the end of your set list, and then you go off stage, and then people, depending on where you are, they either shout, "We want more," or "Zugabe" in German. Is there like a Dutch thing that you can say?
Yeah, I think it's "We want more," or the Dutch "Nog een liedje," which means another song.
Wow, that's cute. Well,
but I think We Want More is more popular.
Yeah, that's what I had have heard every time we were in the Netherlands. But maybe they were just being kind because they knew that we don't speak Dutch. Well, anyway, so the thing that I want to talk about is that, you know, I'm gonna be come clean here. It's probably not a surprise, but when we write a set list for a concert, we already write in the songs for an encore, and we end the concert before. Usually we end the concert and go off stage, even though we still have time, because we sort of want to leave that room for the encore. And wow. So it's not really, so we in some way we expect, or at least we hope for the fact that people will, you know, shout for more songs, and so that we can come prepared. But it's all a bit of a, I don't know, a bit of a ruse maybe. And sometimes it feels a bit silly because during the concert, like towards the end of the set, I'm always already trying to convey, like, you know, this might be the last song, but it doesn't have to be because, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So I don't know. That always feels a bit weird, but it also feels like it's sort of a tradition, you know, at concerts. How do you handle that?
Well, we have one band member, my brother Lars. He is super, super opposed to encores, and especially writing them in. He hates it with a passion. So we don't really do that. So when it does happen and there is time left, so when you have a forgiving stage manager and he's like, no, mate, it's fine, play another song. Then we're often caught with our trousers down. We're like, okay, well, Lars, now we don't really have anything. And we're just, okay, which song is sort of fresh? So, no, we just play the entire hour or 90 minutes. And then, I don't know. We don't do that. But I think we are one of the few bands that doesn't. If you look at many set lists, there is often like, from other bands, there's often like a line and then encore. And I think Omnia does it, Found does it. All the big ones, all the big bands do it. And I don't really know. Yeah, we just can't because Lars doesn't want to. It's as easy as that.
Huh. Well, that's a clear-cut answer. I think more recently, for example, when we played at Castlefest last year, we also didn't put, the encore because I think I learned, or it was brought to my attention, that that's not really a thing you do on festivals. On festivals, you just play up until the point where you are supposed to go off stage. It's just the proper etiquette, I think. That's what I've been told. And honestly, it makes sense. And it also takes away that awkward part of the banter where you want the people to know that you can still play theoretically. So, yeah. Well, that's interesting. That's the way how you handle it with Seed. So,
Well, yeah, Lars is like, okay, so we can waste 2 minutes going on stage, or we can just play another song. So I think he has a point. I mean, when you're live, there's room for theatrics, so I wouldn't mind doing it. It's fun to make a little thing around it. But has it ever happened to you that, so you obviously sort of expect the encore if you write it in, has it ever happened that the audience was like, okay, bye?
Well, I mean, it's probably gonna sound like a lie, but no, I think it's also something you sort of decide during the show, you know, because sometimes when it's obvious that, you know, they're probably not gonna, you know, call for an encore because of, you know, whatever reason, then I just sort of, because I'm the one who announces the songs on stage also, then I'm just going to shift some songs around, you know, and communicate to the others that we're, you know, this is our last song. Like, make it very clear that this is actually our last song. I don't think it has ever happened that we, you know, we sort of went off stage expecting the crowd to want an encore, and then they didn't. So yeah, I guess we're lucky in that regard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the crowd has a lot of power.
Oh, actually. Yeah.
But yeah, I think you can sort of feel the energy of the audience to sort of feel like there's going to be that whole, let's go. And there's also the, like you said, the stage manager, the strictness. If you've maybe had a delay in sound check where you know that you have to sort of make up time for the timetable to work again for the band after. So there's a lot. There's actually, encores are a finicky thing, unless you calculate it in.
Yeah. Hey. I also like, as you said earlier, like the theatrics of it. I like that when you do an encore, and then you can sort of, you know, you can do the thing where only the drummer gets back on stage and starts playing, and then one after one, the band members can come out and like start playing their part, and you can, like, there are some music, fun musical things that you can do around that also, like start with a little jam and then lead into a song, you know, that's all things that we have done, and it's just a nice way to change things up from time to time.
I'll have to take your word for it, sadly. Someday we might play our first regulated theatrical encore, because it sounds like a lot of fun, actually, and I'm all about theatrics, but yeah. Oh well, a democracy,
Lars is just really punk rock, apparently.
Yeah,
and I respect that.
Yeah.
So now we've passed the encore. We say goodbye to the audience for real. We'll take our final bow. We'll point the merch tent out one last time.
So make that all the cliche jokes. We have to get home and eat. We don't have any money.
Yeah, and then you'll go off stage. And then what happens next?
Well, I think a very cool and typical thing is for this scene is the whole, every artist goes to their merch stand and hangs out with their fans, and autographs are a big thing, and actually selling physical CDs is still a big thing. Even though people can't play it, the fans want to collect, the fans want to support, and that is a really cool culture that I've first always seen from the queues for the autographs, like for bands like Omnia or Faun, and I was super starstruck, like, oh my god, I can get an autograph and it's going to be great. And I think that is a very, very nice thing that a lot of the bands take the time to go out to their merch stand, hang with the people they've shared the energy with, and properly say goodbye and thank everybody for the support.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such a fun part, and I love, because it's also another way to connect with your audience and with the people, because when you're on stage, you're usually more connecting with the audience as a whole. You know, you don't talk to singular people there. So, but afterwards you have a chance to get a bit, you know, to have a bit more contact and to talk and to get to know some of the people. And yeah, it's always really lovely, and I love it a lot. But but sadly for with Waldkauz, that's usually not the next step after going off stage, because usually after when we play, we have a band playing right after. So we go off stage being all sweaty and worked up from the show, and then we have to get right back up and get all this, like get all the microphone stands, the instruments, the drums, our whole technical equipment, have to get it like off stage and be very quick about it, because we, like, at this point we don't have what is it called, like roadies or anything. So we have to usually do it all by ourselves and be very quick about it. And that's such a bummer, because you come off stage feeling like, oh, that was such a cool show, and you want to sort of bask in that afterglow of like and enjoying that energy, but then you have to rush back up and get all the stuff off stage, and I'm like, ugh, this is not what I want to do right now. So yeah,
that's completely anticlimactic, and it's interesting thing to see as well. There's like the perfect fans that understand that you're in a rush and you do want to talk with them, but not from the stage while you have to clear it out because there's a band waiting to do their build up. So it's interesting. Some people don't really realize that, and other people are very understanding in that regard. Some people are like, can I buy a CD here from stage? Well, no.
Yeah, that's always weird. But yeah, I don't. Yeah, so that's the thing that happens right after the concert, and then, you know, when all the stuff has gotten off stage and sort of maybe some stuff already packed away. Ideally, then we can sort of wind down and like talk to the people who are waiting at the merch tent, and maybe like have a beer. The after show beer is something that I greatly enjoy, because. Unlike before a concert or also during a concert, mostly none of us drink alcohol because it has an impact on the performance, as we all had to learn one way or the other. So we sort of refrain from that. But then after the show, it's nice to get like a cool, refreshing beverage. So that's something you do?
Well, I have to. Oh, what? Drinking after the show, yes, but before and during. Well, not during, really, just our last song, when there's always, like, someone from another band or a crew member bringing us beers, but I tend to sort of, I tend to drink a beer before the show, so I don't think as much about what I'm saying, and that helps with making cool and funny stories, and sometimes it helps with creating nonsensical, whimsical, way too long stories. But yeah, so we everybody has knows their limits in that regard. We don't want to be on stage thinking we sound great while we actually sound like some drunk cats driving and hitting stuff, and no, so we have our limits, but the after show beer is definitely not the first of the day. No,
I mean, the scenario I'm describing is of course the ideal scenario. No, you know, things happen.
Oh. Yes, they do. Yeah, because that's also a thing. This is a crazy cool thing on festivals. Like we discussed in earlier episodes, the crazy Viking with the huge horn with the sort of meat saliva mixture that's being offered to you before the show. I generally don't say no to that. So it's tough, especially when you play later in the day, to not have any drinks in your system.
Yeah, because especially sometimes on some festivals, when you want to drink something, there is only water, and if you want something else than water, then you just have to drink beer. If you don't want to like get super sweet, like soda or something, which is also not the best, I think.
Nope, definitely not when you have to sing or play the flute. I always start drooling and other stuff in my flute, so yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's great. It's a very interesting bioculture, I think, in the headpiece of my... my whistles.
You should clean it sometime, Kuhn.
Yeah, but, okay, there are these epic memories when I'm jumping on stage and my flute sort of destroys my lips with my teeth, and there's blood running through the labium, and it's so cool. And then it's like a blood memory, and I have to just leave it on.
No, okay, that sounds pretty cool. I'll take that back. Just keep it as it is. This is amazing.
Yeah, and it sort of discourages people from wanting to play my flute. But I also tend to stick my flute up my nose for the encore, so. I think people think twice.
Wow. If you haven't seen a seed show before, I think that surely will convince people to just check it out. There is blood, there is snot, there is beer. It's amazing.
It's all there.
All right.
Yep.
So we have the interaction with the audience after the concert. We have the sort of after show beer, and I don't know how it is with you, but for us, we have a lot of packing stuff, and when a new year starts, we are most active during this time currently, until late summer or even autumn. And in the beginning, it takes us quite a while to pack down after a concert because we haven't done it for some time. But at some point during the summer, we get so fast in packing down, we are done in half an hour with the caravan loaded. But sometimes it takes also depending how the backstage looks, if it's easily accessible for our sprinter or our caravan, it can take a long time to pack everything down, because you're often told to do that because the other band that plays after you also needs the space to unpack their stuff and then also to park their vehicles, and so it's a lot of that. How is that for you? Because I think you have a much slimmer setup than us.
Yeah, who knew that there was no unlimited private parking and private dressing rooms in the backstage of festivals? That what you're telling right now, after show, you have to make sure it's all gone for the next band. Yes, that's a harsh reality. And you're right by saying that we have way less heavy ordnance, because you have your own table on stage, I think you said. You have a drum set, you have all the crashes, you know what I mean. So I think it's definitely easy for us. We have five guitar thingies and stuff, but it's mostly instruments. So it's not as much of a hassle, but it's definitely always something that sort of already snaps you out of the mood a little, especially when cars can't be close to the stage. If for some reason festivals have decided not to follow that point in the rider. It's a reality check and a detoxifying walk to the car. It has to be done, and it's sometimes it's very easy to forget that it's actually work. You're getting paid, you have to deliver. That's a strange mix, especially in this genre with such a meegaand audience, emotionally invested audience. You just want to keep hanging out with them, keep sharing the good vibes. It sucks that there's all that logistical stuff, but I sort of sound a little bit spoiled, of course. But we are talking about the after show thing here, and it's there's a sharp contrast by playing and then cleaning your mess.
Yeah, absolutely. So ideally you packed everything down, and then ideally the festival isn't over yet, because I don't think any of us are at the point currently where you play the big late evening night show
all the time.
So all the time. Yeah. Oh shit, I guess I underestimated that. No. So ideally you get to hang out on the festival afterwards, and I realized that today that's also a thing that I'm definitely gonna miss this year, because I like playing live yourself is the best, but I also love watching other bands play, especially when they're friends or acquaintances, and you just watch from the side stage or just from somewhere in the audience, and you get to see your other bands doing their thing, and then hanging out with the people that you only meet at these festivals because they're vendors there or they're also musicians, and then you get to have cool talks with cool people, you get to have some drinks, and then it's summer and it's like warm, but also not super warm. So you might have to put on a jacket, but it's actually very cozy and you just enjoy yourself there. And that's, and you also have, you also can relax because you have already done your job and you did it well, ideally. So yeah, I think that's also like definitely the afterglow, after show part that I really, really enjoy. Is that something like, can you get out of like the being on stage mode, or are you just instantly exhausted after that, or do you still have like energy to keep going through the night?
I would say the latter, because that sort of feeling of relief, the being proud of yourself, the having delivered, and then, like you said, it's especially on these festivals, it's very concentrated in a season. It's thus making it quite rare to see some people, and that aspect sort of gives you the energy to just keep going and go back to being a visitor and watch all the beautiful stuff these festivals have to offer. So, yeah, I have to sort of watch myself to not keep going through the night, especially when you're playing another show maybe the next day when it's a longer festival. But yeah, that's definitely something that that is a big part that sort of makes you keep coming back to this, even though it's maybe a tricky genre. I think this is a perk that not many I don't know, of course, if you are perhaps a great musician in a different musical genre, not many genre festivals have this great tight-knit community between literally everyone there, from crew to vendors to just visitors, just musicians. It's all connected.
I think there is definitely other genres that have like a very good, I think like a lot of genres that are very DIY, like metal or like punk and hardcore, and maybe also like just underground music in general, mostly only exists because there is like people of like different people being very passionate about it. And I've definitely been to concerts or like venues where that was very tangible, like especially like in, you know, like, you know, the music that I like metal and stuff like that. There is often, you know, it's often very, very tangible that it exists because there is a lot of love and support going on in that scene from everyone, from bands to promoters to the venues. So, but the one advantage that the medieval folk, pagan folk genre, whatever you want to call it, has is that we get to have the nicest open air festivals and like the coolest atmospheres with all the, you know, the little lights up in the trees and all of that, because that you can't really beat that. That's the really good stuff.
Yeah, it's like the hippiness and spiritualistic stuff that also goes on. Because I've been to loads of metal gigs, and I've sort of always felt like people were, okay, during the gig, this does not apply. Then you're all a bit headbanging family. But when the gig's over, it's more like everybody sort of retreats back to their own island. But that maybe it was just, maybe that's just power metal audience, and I've been to the wrong, been to the wrong places at the wrong time. But I don't know.
Yeah, the power metal fans all need to go back to their homes and play Dungeons and Dragons, fucking nerds.
Yeah. They have to revive Dio.
No. Oh shit. Well, I'm gonna ask, do you have any like cool, juicy backstage after show party stories that you want to share with our audience, maybe?
I have loads, and I think 90% are not for everybody's ears to sort of protect musicians from themselves. Damn, what are some great backstage things? Yeah, I mean, it's super cliche, but on folk festivals, there's often great jam sessions going on between bands. Sadly, though, it's, and you can smite me down and hate me for this, I'm not a big fan of playing just playing hello, I know this traditional and I know this traditional. And I like jamming more, like original stuff, and just see where it flows. And there have been some great examples of those in the backstage or on hotels, in hotels often being shut down because it's in the middle of the night and you should shut your stupid hippie ass up. We are all civilized people. That's always a shame. But it involves drunk musicians, and it, I don't think I can share it. It involves. Okay, let me say it involves a portable toilet.
Wow, you definitely have to tell me once we start recording.
That is fine, and it's cool because you also know the person. Oh,
amazing.
So. Okay, sorry guys, it's enough of the inside jokes. And you, what's your fondest backstage memory?
Well, I guess it's pretty similar to yours. That I don't, I don't want to call out people. It's of course there's a lot of the times there's alcohol involved, and everyone is sort of in that same mindset of having a job well done, and afterwards you're just like. Just bring it, basically, and they're, I don't know, it's just fun to, walk with, 15 people over the festival and just in a drunken haze, basically, and just, just enjoying yourself and talking and, I guess I didn't really think about that before, but I don't really want to go into the details, I guess. Not that anything bad happened, but it's just it's not my place to talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
I think one of the for one time we played in Cologne on a role play convention, and then they got us rooms in the super fancy hotel, and then it was 3 a.m. and we ordered pizza, and then there was just this group of wildly dressed people hanging around in the lobby of that super fancy hotel waiting for their delivery their delivery of food and stuff and then I was in the room trying out the cello from our guest musician that played with us, and I don't know, it's a very weird combination of fast food, alcohol and music.
I heard wildcats are very considerate people late at night when there's alcohol involved.
Yeah. So,
I have one story where was from a time with Solo. It also involves a fancy hotel. Apparently, there's people that have enough money to rent out an entire casino and have a sort of private party there with lots of people in cocktail dresses and three-part suits, and then they have bouncers and stuff. And at one point, when I was still with Solo, we had a priest opening the shows, and he also had a nice sip of mead, or several. And then he's a super people person. So he saw all the people in there, and I was like, I have to get in on this party in his full Viking priest regalia. And the bouncer is like, man, no, I can't let you in here. This is a private party with a dress code. No, I have to get in here. And I think he actually managed to get in there for some reason. But that those are definitely some. Scary moments because you feel responsible for everybody involved with your party, and then there's crazy always crazy stuff that happens on the high of a gig, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So I that was the after show party. I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about after show parties or backstage parties. I think that's a whole trove of anecdotes that are just waiting to be unleashed, ideally. And so now usually I think after shows we are fortunate enough these days to stay in a hotel or in a pension or a bed and breakfast, whatever you want to call it. But there have been times where, especially in the beginning, where we sort of had to make a name for ourselves first, where there were like 2-day medieval fairs where we just camped out and just a normal camping tent in front of the stage, and then waking up with a very froggy throat and being like, I hope I can sing today. And, you know, that was fine because it was like in the early days and it was all very romantic and adventurous. But I think we're all happy that we sort of got away from that a bit and that we get to like sleep in nice places now. But sometimes you don't sleep in so nice places. Do you have like a story of like the worst accommodation you ever stayed in?
Yeah, we still stay on campings quite a bit though, because we like it. But it's definitely not good for your voice. And we sort of tend to turn away from it now, especially now we have Joe and we're getting older. Yeah, we're still young, but yes, our backs start to hurt. Yes, I have one fairly crappy thing. We were being put in a house that was condemned to be destroyed, and it might go without saying that this house was not well maintained, and there was fungi all over the floors and the ceilings, and it just felt like a biohazard. And you didn't know if the floor would hold, you didn't know if it was safe in there. And well, at that moment, you can't really, there was no option to sort of go away or pay your own hotel and go back on the road or whatever. But yeah, that was definitely like a horror thing. It was like, it wouldn't have been weird to hear, "Do you want to play a game?" In the middle of the night. That was super scary. Yeah. And you?
Well, we had a couple of things. You know, nothing ever truly horrible. You know, I have the tendency to... I have bad memory, just generally, so my memory tends to gloss over bad experiences. So when I think back of things, I'm like, nah, it wasn't too bad, I guess. But I remember this one pension that we stayed in, I think it was somewhere like in the south of Germany, maybe. And the festival itself was very... We played like just under a tent, so there wasn't really a stage, and it had rained the whole day, and because there was no stage, the rain also sort of like got onto like the grass where we had set up and where we played, and so we were already like done in that regard. And then the pension was sort of, I think in one of the rooms the we opened like a closet door, and the closet was just full of empty beer bottles, and then the sheets were disgusting and looked, I don't know, the fabric felt like it hadn't been changed in ages. And I think that was when Gina was still playing with it, and I think she ended up like sleeping in the car because she was so grossed out. And in the morning we went to the breakfast room which just looked like the living room of like an 80-year-old woman, and there was all these like weird cat figurines. And yeah, it was just, there have been some truly bizarre places where we stayed. Not all of them bad, but you know, just definitely bizarre. We have stayed like at a yoga studio once, for example, which wasn't bad, but also like, okay, I guess this is happening.
Yeah, there's the great accommodations, and there's the very special ones. It's definitely, if you want to see the world and come to places you didn't know that even existed in this plane of existence, join a pagan folk band or start out as a small metal band or whatever, and you will definitely broaden your horizons.
Yeah, but I don't know. I guess we are very spoiled in that regard with getting to stay at hotels, because I definitely know that there's a lot of like metal and punk bands who, even though like some of them I would consider like bigger bands, but then I see like their Instagram posts and they're still crashing, like they're still sleeping on like the floors and couches of friends or fans in the towns they play in. And I mean, I respect that a lot, but it's also it's pretty shitty that you don't get paid enough as a musician to sort of pay for moderate accommodation yourself, so that you don't have to bother people with having to let you stay over and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's always, definitely for me, it's always nice to have like a private space to retreat into, because all the highs and the energy that you get from playing, you also need to sort of let it all go that soon, like in the evening or the next morning. That's pretty important for me personally. Do you also feel that?
Oh, absolutely. I love, you know, I love like getting wild at an after show party and like staying out until like 3 or 4 in the morning. But sometimes it's also just so nice to get like into the hotel or wherever you're staying and like close the door behind you and have this calm zone. I usually, because Nina and I, we're a couple, so we get to stay together in a room most of the time, and it's just, that's so relaxed when you can just, because as fun as it is to be around people all day, you are, at some point, you have, you know, you have enough of people and you just want to get relaxed and get calm, and then there's nothing nicer than that, and then just taking a nice shower. And then I usually want to put on some relaxed jazz music because that really calms me down, but Nina hates it, so I end up not doing it, which is a bit sad, but, you know, and drink some water, hydrate. It's the best. I love it.
Yep. Very important to get back into the Zen mode and recharge. I've definitely had festivals where I forgot that, and I felt that in the coming week. So yeah, we were actually going to talk also about the sort of after festival blues, but thinking about it makes me sort of depressed already. Especially because this whole period is sort of like an after festival blues. So maybe you can just give it. Let's do a very short summary of the thing, and then quickly skip over it to happier things.
So the after show blues. I think everyone who attends a festival, in what role, doesn't matter, experience the after festival blues or the after show blues, where, you know, you're away from the festival or the concert, and then you have fun memories, and then it's a bittersweet thing, because you're happy you experienced the things, and you're happy you met the people you did, but you're also sad because there's, you know, a bit of a void that has been filled with that experience, and you don't know when it'll be filled again. So yeah, I honestly think it's a very bittersweet, but like melancholic, enjoyable feeling most of the time. But also to be real, sometimes I feel super useless after, especially after we've, you know, in summer, like sometimes we play like a show every weekend, like a couple of shows every weekend, and then there'll be like a time where we come back on like Sunday night, and then it's Monday, and that's fine because you're still tired and you're still like catching up on things. But then there's Tuesday, and I feel super useless and just like, oh shit, what person even am I? So,
wow.
Yeah, that's a weird feeling sometimes. But usually, you know, I snap back eventually. You know, it never stays with you or with me for too long. But I've definitely felt like super bummed out and like just empty after certain experiences.
But is that like because you feel like, what the hell am I doing with my life, or is it different?
No, it's mostly because I feel most as myself when I get to do the music thing, you know?
Yeah.
Traveling around and like doing, you know, playing music and then driving in the car for hours and yada yada yada, whatever. And then that's like when I feel most as myself and most at peace with myself. And sometimes then when you get back, it's hard to get back into reality, you know, to then you have to try and you know, get that sort of fulfillment in different ways. And sometimes it takes me like a day to adjust back to that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Maybe a good example of it. For me, it's always, I call it the Narnia feeling. Like, for the people that have seen Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the Chronicles of Narnia, they go through the wardrobe and they grow into epic warriors. They are kings and queens. They grow old and then they step back through the wardrobe and they're young and they have to go to school again. And they're not kings. They're not queens. They're not anything. There's no magic. It's just back to the wardrobe and your old clothes. And sort of that feeling, it's like, oh God, I was in Narnia and now I'm not.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. That describes it pretty well.
But then again, I think we have to be mindful to realize that it's awesome to be feeling that sad about getting back from something so great, because like you said, the memories were super great, and there's everybody that has got something to miss that bad has tasted something really great before. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's I'd like to end that topic on that note, because that's very nicely put. So I think
everybody at home as well right now. It sucks that you can't do stuff, and we're all in that together, but
we're all in this together.
Together. Yeah. High School Musical, everyone. Yes. So realize that the great things you're longing for will return at some point. And you already have the great memories. So thrive on them.
Yes. Nice. So, there's two more things for us left to do in this episode. And before we do the usual recommendations of the songs, I'd like to propose something to you, the audience of this podcast. Hello. So now we've talked a whole lot about our experiences with like festivals and playing live and whatever, but we also want you to talk about it. So I'm going to put up after maybe tomorrow, you know, not when this is going to be released, but tomorrow, like on Saturday, I'm going to put up on Facebook, like an email address. And I want you to record yourself talking about your favorite concert, your festival experience. It doesn't matter if you are a vendor or just a visitor, or even there's a couple musicians listening. So whatever your most favorite experience is, please record yourself talking about it for, you know, 1 to 3 minutes maybe, and then send us that recording, ideally through WeTransfer. That's what I'm going to put the email up for. And then for the next episode, we're going to put in those clips of you talking and then talk about what you talked about. And I think this can be the start of like getting more of an audience interaction, and we'd love to hear about your experiences.
Yes. Yes. Let's make this a whole interactive inception podcasting. So don't be shy. We can even edit your voice into a beautiful auto-tuned angel. No, we won't.
I honestly can't. I don't have auto-tune on my DAW. Sorry. But yeah, it's fine. Expensive. Yeah. It's just fine if you just do like, a recording with your phone. Phone microphones these days are actually pretty awesome. So don't let yourself be held back because you think, but I don't have a nice microphone. That's no excuse. Just do it.
Even your laptop microphone, it's all good. So let's just get something going here. Yeah.
Yes. So with that out of the way, let's get into this week's recommendations.
Recommendation.
So Kuhn, will you do the honors and start with your first recommendation?
Oui, oui. La vache qui rit. And mon first recommendation is... Let's see, which one do we start with first? I have two open right here. I will start with a nostalgia thing for me. A band that is sincerely missed, but has left their mark on some great memories of mine on festivals with musicians like Juan Pino, Martin Seberg, Sören, Hammerlund, I think, is his surname. Wow. Oh my God. Couldn't.
It is.
Yeah. And the great, her name is Anna Wright, the singer.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, shite. I might have screwed this up. It went so smooth. But I'm talking about none other than the sadly ex-band Valravn. And a song that's completely dug itself into my mind when I first heard it is the song where the hurdy-gurdy plays a major role, and that's Marsk. So, yeah.
Rad.
That's Anna Katrin. Cool, yeah, I think that's it. Yes, fuck yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's an awesome song and an awesome band. I think it's the second song of theirs that you have chosen for the playlist, actually.
Really? I thought so. Think I did Asynje, but did I do Valravn?
Oh, maybe. Maybe I'm mistaken. Well, anyway, it's a great band and a great song.
I'll just do it one every week from Valravn now. I'll be a strict.
Okay. So, yeah, my first band is also, again, a Scandinavian band. I think they're from Denmark, and they are called Dreamers Circus. They're a trio of mandora, violin, and accordion, and they play this very nice modern take on Scandinavian folk music with lots of, like, classical string elements, and my favorite song of theirs is the song A Room in Paris. And it's this very beautiful mixture of, like, very uplifting Scandinavian folk music and classical influences, modern influences, and it's so enjoyable, and it really lifts you up, and I think that's something we all currently need.
Nice, nice. You give me some new stuff as well. I like it. I lot.
I'm gonna send you. There's a cool live version of that song on the video. I'm going to send that to you once we start recording. It's amazing.
Cool, cool, cool. My next one is a Dutch band called Paralysis. And I chose a song which is one of their own creation. And it's sort of, they can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm still going to say they're sort of swinging in between traditional and piratey vibes and the whole pagan folk thing. And the song I Am Crow, it also has a music video, is sort of closer to that pagan folk side. And I really, really, really like that. I was very impressed when I heard that the first time. So we'll be adding that to the playlist. Be sure to check them out. They're also very nice people, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've listened to that. Maybe I just can't recall right now, but I'm definitely going to check that out because that sounds amazing. So my second song is by a band who has members from different places, I think, but I think they have, like, their home base in Belgium. And that band is called Violon Babar.
Violon
Babar. And I think the idea is, it's one percussionist, and then it's the other two members sing and also play stringed instrument, like a bowed stringed instruments. I think that's where the name sort of comes from, because they both play different types of bowed instruments, like violin-like instruments. One of them is a Mongolian musician who plays the horse head violin,
Morikur.
I don't know how that is pronounced. And the other plays a Hungarian gadulka, which is an amazing stringed instrument with, like, lots of sympathetic strings. And I saw them live on Festival Medieval, and I am not a dancer. I don't dance at, you know, it's just not something that I like to do, or, like, move rhythmically too much at live concerts. But they really made me sort of dance a little, because it was such great and engaging music. And I was so impressed that they created such a huge sound with just three people. And the song I'm choosing is a song that ventures more into the Mongolian direction, I think, which I've put a lot of Mongolian music on here, haven't I? Well, it's called Wind in the Steppe, and it's an amazing song. You should check it out.
Yeah, and steadily our playlist is growing, and I think with a very interesting collection of bands that will sadly never all meet again on the same festival. But hurrah for Spotify! Hurrah!
Nice.
Sorry.
Bless you.
Yeah. Thank you. No, so we're not with that, getting into diversity.
Oh, sorry. It's fine. Okay. So that was a very enjoyable episode, to me at least. And yeah, I think we're coming to an end. Thank you all very much for your attention. I'm still looking forward to recording this podcast every week. And if you enjoy listening to it, you should tell all your friends about it, because we want to definitely keep building this and keep building a community around it, and have you interact with us through the internet, because that's sadly the only way we can really interact right now. So we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love it if you shared this podcast with anyone who might be interested. So, and as per usual, stay safe, stay healthy, stay inside, take care of your friends and of your families, even if it's just by calling them or writing them a message. And yeah, see you all next week. Anything you want to add, Kuhn?
No, well, just that it's great that there's already loyal people sharing our podcast every week, which brings a smile to my face. And I think we're looking forward to getting your voice messages about your favorite festival concert memory. And on top of that, I think you've said it all. So from me as well, all the best wishes, and fare thee well, dear listeners.